announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
Hey, welcome to another edition of the Filthy FRB Show. It's Sunday, November 22nd, and we're back. It's been a long fucking time, Tom.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was most, some people were like, you know, where's a podcast as this, my earbud falls out here. And I just haven't been home much, man. I went to Singapore for that one championship event. They put on a great show. Ben Askren was supposed to fight this guy, Sapo Santos, who decided to show up on a Tuesday, fly 10,000 miles, show up on a Tuesday, and then cut from over 200 pounds down to 170, which kind of sounds insane, don't you think, Tom?
Yeah, that does sound like a lot of weight to be cutting, but I think in this situation, he was right. I think Askren's a chump. Should have taken the fight.
He listens to this. He listens to every episode.
Oh shit! Does he really?
Yeah. Whenever we put it out, I get a text from him saying, "Hey, this you were wrong about this." And,
hey, no, seriously, can you go back and edit that out?
Yeah, of course. And you know, Ben now has a podcast that he does with Tommy Rollins, who's a he's a big wrestling star at Ohio State, and then freestyle wrestling.
I wouldn't mess with that guy, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. I remember once Dana like kind of bitched at him. He thought he was just some random fan.
I remember that actually.
Yeah, the Dana was like, oh, he's just a runner-up, almost made the Olympics, like, I think in 2004 and 2008.
Yeah, it was him and Mako were battling back and forth, if I remember correctly, right?
Exactly, yeah. Mako, yeah, funny enough, I met Mako in Singapore. He was one of Santos's coaches.
And oh, really?
Yeah, so it seems like he's doing more coaching down
at... Was he the nutritionist, or...?
I don't think Mako worries too much about nutrition. I think he just does whatever he wants. And he really is one of the scariest people. Like, you just walk past him in a hotel, and I don't even think he noticed me, but I had this sneaking suspicion he was mad at me over something.
You know what he would have been great in, Brian? He would have been awesome in, like, the old UWFI in Japan.
Yeah.
He would have been, like, great as Gary Albright. Would have been
yeah Gary Albright. There's a real he was really good. I don't think people know like Mako was like he was so feared. I mean he was the biggest high school wrestling recruit. You know he originally went to Iowa, then went to Oklahoma State. He a four-time national finalist. He won two.
And he played football, right? And he played football.
Yeah, he played football for Oklahoma State also.
My buddy Travis Stevens. Used to date his sister as well, I believe.
Oh yeah, did she make the Olympics in judo?
I don't think that she made the Olympic team,
but she's really good.
Yeah, she was. I don't know if she still competes or I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's a nice segue, judo, because I know people want to hear more about Ronda Rousey. They haven't heard enough about her, but
seldomly talked about topic.
Yeah, it's kind of. Flew under the radar, and I didn't get a chance to watch it live. I was going from Singapore to Tokyo, but I had the in-flight internet, and so I was following it on Twitter. And man, I was absolutely shocked. I
mean, what airline were you on, Brian?
Japan Airlines.
Japan Airlines. How nice was it?
Not great, man. I mean, it was.
There wasn't like a geisha in every seat.
Nah, it was like two seats, a walkway, and then four seats, a walkway, and then another two seats.
See, I envisioned something strange going on there. Like maybe the in-flight movie is like some strange octopus porno or,
you know. They did give ice cream, which was a nice touch.
Interesting.
I'll tell you, the worst part about that whole trip over there, man, was the Chicago to Tokyo leg. That was 13 hours.
Yeah.
And they only had Amstel Light. And I'm like, well, what do you mean you don't have, like, any other light beers? I mean, that's the one beer, like, I won't even drink it if somebody offers.
Brian, think about this. That's that exact flight that my buddy Danny took to go to the fight in Chicago. So remember, he flew out and then flew right back. So he made that flight within like a day of it, of each other, within like 24 hours.
His only advantage from coming from Asia to Chicago was you gain some time. I guess that's the only reason why it worked out math-wise.
But you're still on the plane for how long? 13 hours, right?
Well, first he's got to get to Tokyo. So that it's seven it's 7 hours to get to Tokyo. Or he could have gone through Hong Kong, but it sounded like he went Tokyo, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so 7 hours plus 13, although, you know, with the jet streams, maybe that 13 is more like 11. It's still looking at damn near 20 or more hours.
and then land for, I don't know, 20 hours and then do it right again.
Hey, did you – another guy I got to say hello to was Rich Franklin in Singapore. He's vice president of One Championship.
What about Heath Sims?
Did you run I got to say hello to Heath. I saw him briefly at the weigh-in on Thursday. But did you hear what happened to Rich Franklin on the way back to the United States?
Yeah. He got stopped in L.A.
Right? Dude, they fucking handcuffed him.
Yeah.
It was like because he looked like a fugitive.
Jim Carrey? They thought he was Jim Carrey?
Yeah, I mean, who could he possibly look? I mean, yeah. I'm like, holy shit.
They're like, that's the insane guy from The Cable Guy. He escaped. Get him.
Man, I mean, and he kind of laughed it off. I mean, kind of, I would have been
the
fucking
hell else
pissed.
You gonna do? I mean,
I don't know. Isn't there some recourse? Some you can complain. But, you know, I'll tell you, man, coming back into the United States, I haven't traveled international in a while. It was a fucking bitch because you got to go through, you know, customs and show your passport. And then you have to go outside and then come through security again.
Yeah, they have those weird – there's like something you can sign up for, like global entry or something.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, the international version of – TSA pre-check. I have that one. I just don't have the international one.
But, yeah, is it worth it?
TSA pre-check? Oh, it's awesome, man. It saves you so much time and your whole trip, like your stress level, you don't have to, you know, like say you're showing up at O'Hare, which is one of the busiest airports, or Hartsfield in Atlanta. You're like, oh, fuck, I don't know what time I need to get there. Maybe two hours. But, I mean, with TSA pre-check, I mean – you literally just walk right through.
Yeah.
And, you know, this one time in Chicago, I think I would have been online for an hour and took 10 minutes through the TSA pre-check. $85. It's good for 5 years. I mean, they take your fingerprints. So if you've done anything kind of crazy in your past, you might not want to get TSA pre-check. Okay. Because they will run those fingerprints through the some kind of FBI crime database.
I'm signing up right now. Seriously.
Yeah, but you know, Tom, you've been to Singapore, right?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, so I was floored at the expense of some things. You know, like even like the cheapest beer they have, it seems like this Tiger beer is their most popular one.
Yeah.
$15. I mean.
Yeah, right. I told you, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah. So I had a double scotch because somebody told me, hey, just drink the scotch. It's the same amount of money. It'll do three times the work and in the long run. So I had a double scotch. That was $36. Okay. And then I had two beers at 15 each. So that's $68. I had a double scotch and then two 12-ounce beers. 68 Singapore dollars. Yeah.
Hey, I wasn't kidding when I told you, buddy.
Yeah, fucking nuts. But, you know, I'll tell you, it's pretty amazing. You know, whoever designed or whoever's idea Singapore was, you know, props to you. I don't know how you did it because it's this, like, paradise, this rich paradise – in the middle of Southeast Asia.
It's too clean. It's too clean to me, man.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, but just to finish that point, every other country around it is, you know, the third world developing abject poverty, but except Singapore. But yeah, I mean, man, they are totally about their rules. Like they even have foot imprints on escalators to like where you should stand while you're on the escalator at a mall.
No water on the subway.
And gum. You're not allowed to chew gum.
And it's like 100 fucking degrees.
Oh, man, it was bad. It was like 92 degrees, extremely high humidity. I mean, it was like summertime in South Florida. The only thing that was reasonable there was cabs, funny enough, because nobody has cars, or not that many people have cars, because of the tax implications.
Yeah. It's like a huge a tariff.
Yeah. But that Marina Sands Resort.
Marina Bay Sands.
Yeah, that place was unbelievable. I've never seen so much high-priced shopping, you know, like you name it, Prada, Dolce & Gabbana. I don't know all the brands, but I know they're really expensive.
Dolce & Gabbana.
Yeah, man. And then we went up to the 57th floor where they have that pool and they have some Wolfgang Puck restaurant. And, man, the views are incredible. And they actually had a bargain. Those beers are only $12.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What a fucking bargain that is, I'll tell you.
But, yeah, and then at happy hour, sometimes they have two for 20. And when I sat down, they were like, yeah, it's two for 20. This big smile on my face. I was like, are you serious? Two for 20? That's a great deal. Give me four.
Yeah. Sounds like a fucking garbage deal to me, but
yeah, but you know, one championships. Their whole thing is like within two time zones out there. There's 4 billion human beings, and they don't have the English Premier League. You know, they're not good at. I guess they're in that area. They're good at cricket, but there's not that many like major sports, and they think that you know maybe in a couple of generations, mixed martial arts is a major sport in that region, 4 billion human beings and growing, and you know it can just blow up huge.
Yeah, hold on, somebody. Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, I've been waiting for it to happen for a while, and it, you know, it just hasn't happened. So yeah. I have no, you know, I have no faith in that anymore. I guess. Hopefully, Ryzen does something for the scene over there, because you know, I think that really is like an all-encompassing area. I don't think you're going to get a huge influx in the Southeast Asian MMA scene without Japan and you know, Korea also being involved. So hopefully, all those countries can kind of work together to boost, you know, the popularity of mixed martial arts over there and kind of put a different spin on the sport and maybe one that's tailored more towards entertainment, and less towards the UFC's view of what mixed martial arts should be.
You know, it's interesting. The two countries you mentioned, Korea and Japan, those are two that one does not do shows in for whatever reason. They did do a show a couple days back in China, which I got a little bit of the background on it from somebody at one. It's basically like you need to go in there and partner with some kind of sports promotional company, because if you don't, like the government will say, oh yeah, you're welcome, and they'll pull the rug out from under you at the last moment. Like you need like somebody who's really over in Asia, in China.
So basically they need you to invest somehow in a business in China that's probably, you know, has its hands, you know, being run by the government.
I don't know that much about Chinese politics, but it seems
like. Let's contact Evil Yoshida.
On the underground. Is he still active? Is he still active on the underground?
I believe so.
Now, he's always causing problems, isn't it? Is he a Klansman? I've seen some accusations against him.
I think his gimmick is that he's in China. He's like he's a communist or something.
You know, that reminds me when we were at some...
An Asian Semite, is that a thing? Not anti-Semite, but he's...
A self-hating Asian? Like
no, he's a self-promoting Asian.
You know, that reminds another underground legend. So it's Matt Hume, me, Ben Askren, Rich Franklin, former COO of Zions, this guy Billy.
Hold on.
So we're sitting.
Can you run through that again? Ben Askren, Rich Franklin,
Matt Hume, and
Billy,
the former COO of Zions Energy. So we're at this like jazz club slash bar or whatever, and somehow we start talking about the underground. So I'm like, "Hey, Rich, do you know who that CRE guy is? The Cray guy?"
Oh yeah,
because he's the biggest Rich Franklin fan, and he's like, "You know, I have no idea." But he really appreciated all the positive things he said about him. And it was just like, it wasn't just like little messages. I mean, they were like essays.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a big-time Rich Franklin nut hugger.
Yeah, and there was some talk that he had like AIDS or something. I mean, was that all a word?
CRE did?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I mean, that's – and then he disappeared for a while. But, I mean, if you did the math, the amount of posts that he did – in the period of time he did, it's not possible for one human being. I mean, it had to be a team of people writing that.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I loved the – I think his other –
Hey, so also, right, Super Callow has got to be this Eddie Tarvidian account as well, right? I mean, there's no way that that's a separate guy than Super Callow.
Yeah. Did you see Raquel Pennington kind of she thought it really was Edmund. And Edmund, so the fake Edmund invites her for some training to work on a strike. And she's like, sure.
I saw he invited Kingsbury as well. I saw he invited a bunch of people. That's got to be Super Callow. It's got to be.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, everybody knows Super Callow. You know, he's like, and even the people that don't follow him, they're like, yeah, I know who he is because you always retweet him. How could I not?
Yeah, he's phenomenal. Speaking of which, Edward Tarvidian didn't show up for his bankruptcy, hearing or whatever.
Yeah. So I really didn't know what that means. So I asked somebody and they said, it's not incredibly rare to no-show it, but like it's frowned upon. And,
well, he no-showed it multiple times.
Yeah, multiple times. And so this gives the trustee, I guess the trustee is the person that looks after the creditor's interests, and it gives them permission to escalate the investigation.
Oh, yeah.
I guess to do more digging. Now, why – I mean, unless the guy's just a – well, he is a moron. But why wouldn't you show up unless you're given explicit directions by counsel – not to show up, or
I don't know. Maybe he was in Australia. Who knows? I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's not like he did anything in Australia. But let's talk about this a little.
Quiet in the corner.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this a little bit. I mean, I'll admit, man, I was kind of sick of hearing about Rhonda, but I totally bought, you know, how good she was. I mean, I took it hook, line, and sinker. I mean, I just thought that, you know, she could march across the cage and throw Holly on her head and armbar her whenever she wanted to. She was that good. But apparently not. I joke about it, but, you know, she tried to throw Betch a couple months back, and Betch kind of shook her off.
Good God. I saw a GIF of that fight again today, and those punches were terrible by Rhonda. Like, how did she even go down? Honestly, how did Betch go down?
That was so.
She sucks.
Well, I think that's the truth. I mean, if you look at Betch, had a lot of difficulty with Jessamyn Duke. You know, God bless her, but Jessamyn's not a very talented athlete, and she went to a competitive decision with her. But it was like that was so weird with Betch. How do you face plant like that? You think she just wanted out?
No, honestly, I think she was knocked out. But I mean, just shit. Oh man, I don't know.
So Tom, from a technical perspective, tell it, what exactly did Holly do so well? I mean, I guess we know she kept the distance. She was, you know, moving around very well using the space of the octagon.
Yeah,
what were some of the other things?
You know, basically Rhonda does the same thing every fight. And usually her athleticism is able to, kind of carry her through that. despite any technical difficulties that she experiences with her striking. She's so aggressive that, you know, she can just impose her will. But she does do something, the same things basically every time she attacks. So Holly Holm was just ready for that, game planned very well. And this was the first time that Ronda had really faced anybody from a camp that is known for any sort of game planning skills. So, you know, that's something that isn't normally brought into, you know, the spotlight, is the fact that, like, all these other girls, the Besh Kohea trains with the Pitbull brothers. You know, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's I had somebody who's, you know, pretty familiar with Jackson's, you know, strategizing and coaching techniques. And it kind of reminded me of, like, you know, they used to say, or I guess he's still in his prime, Coach K at Duke, like him just being the coach of that basketball team, the lines maker, you know, would give a couple points to Duke just because of the coaching advantage.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems like the Winklejohn and Greg Jackson have the same type of thing, which it might play in here in another 6 weeks with Robbie Lawler versus Carlos Condit.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, you know, even as a fighter, if you're facing somebody from that camp, you'd have to think, like, okay, I need to be prepared for not only, you know, focus on what I'm going to do, but I have to imagine that this person's going to have, you know, a game plan that's going to be trying to thwart what they perceive my strengths to be. So, you know, it just makes you think a little bit extra about what you're doing and the way that you're attacking so that you don't get caught off guard, or so that you don't make a mistake and the other person can kind of use it against you. So it definitely, you know, when you're facing somebody from one of these big time camps, or, you know, AKA or Jackson's or TriStar or one of those, you know, a camp that's known for having guys being well prepared, then, you know, you have to just think a little bit about it more in the back of your mind.
Yeah, I know everybody likes to play amateur psychologist, and I will here for a second, but let's, you know, the day before the fight at the weigh-ins, a couple things that were kind of, I don't know if they raised a red flag. They didn't mean all that much at the moment, but it was like, well, number one, Ronda's mom never misses a fight. She wasn't at the fight, you know, so it was, is that a sign of some, you know, internal struggle? And then you piece that together with Ronda's mom saying that she, if there wasn't a law against it, she would run Edmund over with a vehicle. I mean, that's a pretty big threat. You know, I thought that physically,
I don't know, the guy in Roger Rabbit lived through that, didn't he?
He survived.
I thought so.
But somehow, I think
he got run over by a steamroller.
Yeah, but somehow I think Ronda's mom would, you know, take care of business. But so I also thought that physically, you know, her face was a bit sunk in. I didn't think her abs looked as defined as they have in the past. I don't know if that means a bad weight cut. I don't know if she was getting advice to stay heavy longer and then cut it down. You know, I'm not really sure. So I don't know if there was some signs of a bad weight cut there. And then the other thing, you know,
no, the fight was in Australia, so she didn't have her trademark Carl's Jr. meals to help her get ready and prepare her the week of the fight, nutrition wise.
Yeah, I mean, and then the final thing at the weigh-in that kind of, you know, I said, well, I don't know if that means anything, but after that little tussle with Holly, you know, Joe interviewed her, and Ronda, you know, first I heard it described as a promo. And then I actually got to see the video, and I was like, "That's not a promo. That's a
tantrum.
That's a temper tantrum from somebody who, in that moment, is not very emotionally stable." And you could hear it two or three times in her voice. She was going to burst into tears. And you know, I don't know. Maybe a lot of women, you know, cry. Ric Flair likes to cry a lot, but I don't know. That just seems like an odd reaction to me. You know, the baddest woman on the planet is going to burst into tears because she got in a little arm tussle with Holly Holm.
Yeah, one that she instigated.
Yeah, because she wanted her left arm, was it? And then Holly was like, no, my arm was there.
No, okay. So in the interview, Rhonda said that Holly Holm puts her right arm on the outside. She likes to do that. So Rhonda put her hand on the outside of Holmes to make her feel uncomfortable. Oh. And it's like, okay, so you goaded her into that, and then you're upset about it? Like, come on.
Yeah. You know what is also, it kind of brought back memories of Strikeforce, the first Misha versus Rhonda fight, when Rhonda claims that Misha went to the commission and said, Rhonda headbutted me. And it was like, Rhonda's on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, saying she's a cheap shot taken fake ass bitch or whatever that tweet said. Uh-huh. And it was like, well, why are you narking on if it was a cheap shot? You know, it was like specifically in her book, she said that she was so upset because Misha went and essentially narked on her to the commission for she claimed she was headbutted. So I was like, man, I mean, is this? I mean, a normal person would say this is just because she's trying to sell conflict. She's trying to sell the fight.
Nah,
I don't think so. I think she's just a very emotional girl.
Yeah, I think so too. You know.
Yeah, I guess that can work to your advantage sometimes. Although I can't imagine, you know, fighting angry. I mean, have you ever fought angry?
Well, you know, during the course of the fight, there's been a few fights where I've tried to basically kill my opponent, and that never works out well. So I would say that I have fought angry. You know, not like I wanted to inflict, you know, harm on my opponent for any reason other than winning the fight, but definitely with more emotion, like in the way or in the sense that I wanted to, you know, finish the fight very quickly and with a big knockout, so you kind of expend more energy. So
generally speaking, you don't think fighting with that type of
it's not beneficial.
It's not beneficial. That's what I was looking for.
No, you should go into it like and look at it from a business standpoint.
So Tom, put your coaching hat on here. You throw Edmund over the cage and deport him back to LA so he can go to his bankruptcy hearing. Put Tom Lawler in that cage between the first and second round. What are your instructions to Rhonda?
You have to tell her to, instead of using her jab to try to close the distance, focus on getting her lead leg, her left foot outside of Holly Holm's left foot, because what Holm was doing is moving to her left, like back and away in arching motion. And then when Rhonda would chase after her and throw her lead jab, she would slip to the outside and throw a punch and circle back that way. She did it multiple times during the fight. So obviously when Rhonda would punch, that was Holm's opening to, you know, kind of use her footwork to get outside and create that different angle. So, you know, if I was the coach, you'd have to tell Rhonda to not even give her the opportunity to create that angle anymore. And instead, you know, cut her off with lateral movement instead of forward movement.
But instead, Edmund Tarvidian or
told her she was doing really well.
Yeah. You're doing really well. And, you know, basically we just where we want her.
I don't know.
I mean, to me, that's...
I try to forget because, I mean, it was such terrible advice. I never want to think about it in a high-pressure situation.
You know, because I was... I mean, before I heard the audio of when Travis Brown fought Schaub, and it's just Edmund, you know, cursing and yelling and basically kill this motherfucker or something like that. I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, maybe he's got something against Schaub because, you know, Rhonda Schaub used to be an item, whatever.
Schaub used to train with Edmund too.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, maybe it's a personal thing. And Ricky Lundell was actually handling the instructions from the corner. So he was just kind of being a fan. But, you know, and I was, you know, trying to say, oh, maybe people are just jealous of him because he's got the highest paid fighter in the world. And, you know, even though he says he makes zero income.
No, Vince McMahon has the highest paid fighters in the world.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, I was trying to say, oh, maybe people are exaggerating. He's not such a bad coach. But when you go in there between the first and second round, and your fighter just got her ass kicked, you know, embarrassed, really, picked apart, and you say, doing great, you know, just basically.
Okay, here's the thing to me, Brian.
Yeah.
Is when you have somebody come in and tell you that, they're doing you a disservice. Now, I know I've heard people use this as a counter argument. They're like, you know, what if the person needs that kind of positivity to make them, you know, perform better? And I think if that's true, then that's a sign of mental weakness in the first place. You know, you should be able to be realistic in a situation that's, you know, a high pressure situation.
Yeah, I mean, I would think any fighter would want an honest corner. I mean,
yeah, you need to be able to be confident that you've prepared yourself for any situation. You know, you don't need to be overly confident that you can do anything that you want, because that's not a that's not an intelligent way to fight.
And Tom, you know, I mean, you can say anything you want. It's how you say it. There's ways of shaping something, saying, you know, even somebody who needs positive reinforcement, like she probably does, you know, hey, I like what you're doing here. You're pressuring her, but I need you to do this. You know, blah, 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 blah. Like some of the instructions that you said. I mean, there's ways of saying things that's not totally tearing somebody down, but still correcting them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, and there were some bright spots there. I mean, when Ronda hit Holly Holm, I thought, you know, personally, she was doing, you know, a bit more damage with her strikes. I mean, she would knock home. Holy crap!
Was that a shoot or was that a...
No, that was real.
Okay.
She...
we're going to need to edit. But we don't edit, so...
Yeah. Oh, you're going to edit that thing out about Ben Askren anyways.
Were you serious about that?
No. I was kidding. I was joking. The guy, Ben Askren, was totally in the right.
Yeah.
But anyways, where were we?
I guess about how you could, even if Ronda's somebody that needs positive reinforcement, you could say, you could qualify your criticism by also complimenting her, saying, hey, you're doing this part right.
Okay, when she would hit Holly Holm, she would kind of knock her back like a foot or two, you know, and kind of like knock her off balance. So she was able to hit her a few times and do some damage. So you could key in on that. You could say, you know, great job, Ronda, when you're hitting her. You know, she can't handle your power. Let's put her in more situations where you can make that happen. Let's move this way. Great attempt on the arm bar right after the takedown. Let's get back to that. You know, something as simple as that would do her a lot, you know, more, you know, good in the corner than what he was saying.
Yeah. And, you know, I had a, you know, I think Misha Tate has a really good shot of beating Holly Holm. And I had a few people on Twitter say, well, how can you say that? If Ronda can't get her to the ground, how's Misha Tate going to do it? And, you know, I was just talking to a few people who know a lot more about it than I do. They were like, well, I mean, Ronda has one way of getting you to the ground. She, you know, she does her judo. I don't know the technical term for it, but it's essentially a hip toss. And she gets you down on the ground and she transitions to that arm bar. She doesn't go for single and double leg takedown attempts. Well, number one, she's not a wrestler. Number two, it's pretty well known that she has very bad knees. And, you know, wrestling, very tough on the knees.
Yeah. I absolutely believe that, you know, Misha Tate has a better chance of beating Holly Holm than she does of ever beating Ronda Rousey. And I think Ronda Rousey, you know, obviously has a better chance of beating Misha Tate than she does of beating Holly Holm, and I think Holly Holm has a better chance of beating Ronda Rousey than she does of Misha Tate. So I think we're kind of in a situation where it's a triangle. Maybe we should just have a triangle match, like old school ECW.
Yeah. Or even Katzengano. Katzengano might have a chance. I mean, I don't know where she is mentally. I assume she's coming back sometime in 2016. But, you know, she comes from a wrestling background, and I wonder if she could get Holly to the mat.
She does, but this is, you know, her second big-time layoff right in a row. So I don't know. I personally thought Misha was winning that first fight, and it was a little bit of a quick stoppage. So
yeah, that was that shit referee. What's her name?
Kim
Winslow.
Yeah.
I mean, Misha was pretty beat up, but I mean, she could have let it continue.
Oh,
but...
oh, by the way, congrats to Kim Winslow on her 25th anniversary at the Survivor Series tonight, too.
Yeah, they look very similar. Yeah. But, so, you know, so that kind of lends into the next thing. You know, what's next? And what do you do with Holly Holm? I think you put her against Misha Tate next March or April or even Super Bowl if she's ready to go. And have them fight, because the argument against it was, they're saying, yeah, but then you lose the big money Ronda versus Holly 2 fight. And I said, well, it doesn't matter. Ronda sells based on being Ronda, not necessarily the opponent. So, like, even if Misha beats Holly, so you lose the Holly versus Ronda rematch, but now you got Ronda going for her belt against a person whom she hates, Misha Tate. It's a third fight, but let's remember, 95% of Ronda Rousey fans never saw Ronda versus Misha in Strikeforce.
Yep.
So I think you roll Holly out there, she wins, then you do the rematch. But I think the key to all this is Ronda's got to film two movies.
It depends on how long Ronda's gone for, is basically what it boils down to.
Yeah, and she's got to do her two movies, and then I think she's got to be in there with a serious coach for like 5 or 6 months.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, if she's taking time off from training anyways to do these movies, you know, by the time she gets back in the gym and starts retooling things, you know, does that give her enough time to be ready for a fight at UFC 200 in July or June or whenever it is? Yes, it does. Does it give her enough time to make the improvements that she needs to in order to beat Holly Holm? I don't know that that's the case. And if Ronda Rousey loses again to Holly Holm in such, you know, devastating fashion and so in so quick of a turnaround, you know, I think that really, really hurts the Ronda Rousey hype. You know, her mystique will definitely take a huge hit at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, she's doing that roadhouse.
I think she's better off waiting and, you know, working on her technical skills to the point where she is 100% confident, you know, in her ability to handle whatever Holly Holm's going to do on the feet.
Yeah, I mean, she's doing that roadhouse movie, and that has disaster written all over it. I mean,
now she's just got beat up. Yeah. No one's respect her at the bar. Come on.
Yeah, how are you going to buy that? I think there's...
She's going to be getting slapped around at WorldStar or something. On WorldStar. I don't know. Yeah, WorldStar. I don't know what I'm saying. Ronda Rousey is still, you know, Ronda Rousey is still arguably the second best woman fighter in the world. So there's not going to be anybody that stops her in a bar, but...
And who's to say, really, that you need Ronda at UFC 200? I mean... If McGregor wins, you could have McGregor versus somebody.
But isn't his first defense supposed to be in Croke Park? Which I actually heard that WWE was looking to rebook TLC for next month to Croke Park.
Well,
it's first defense.
What are they going to draw, 5,000 people? I mean, he's not the most over guy there.
I wish he was over.
You know, he went after it with McGregor, but I think it was all bullshit. You know, they went back and forth because when I saw him at the WrestleMania party afterwards, I kind of joked with him about it, and he didn't really bite. It was like it was all a fucking joke.
Uh-huh.
You know? It was like – so I guess the next thing I wanted to talk a little bit about was your impressions from the UFC show last night in Monterrey, Mexico, which might actually be the hometown of Super Calo, but you know,
I thought the show was boring as hell. Neil Magny and Gastelum was a good fight. Lamas and Diego was a good fight. Everything else was subpar. It was the finals of Tough Latin America Southeastern Conference, you know, championship of November.
They gotta pull those fights off the main card.
What are we getting next? It's gonna be UFC like Malta versus Vatican City.
Yeah, I mean,
tough Malta.
What did you think of the controversy about Scott Jorgensen?
I didn't see the fight. I didn't watch those prelims. Yeah. I watched the some of the main card, and I watched the Canelo Alvarez versus Miguel Cotto fight.
Yeah, I mean, well, so basically Jorgensen had an injured foot, and the referee just continued to let the fight go. And
yeah, I heard it was both that fight and there was another fight with the Diego Sanchez fight. They were very reminiscent of the Royal Rumble, I believe, 1994, with Bret and Owen Hart versus the Quebecers.
In what way? I don't remember that one.
That's the one where Bret was injured and it wouldn't tag Owen in.
Oh, and that led to their WrestleMania match, right?
Yeah.
I gotcha. I mean, I wanted to talk a little bit about Diego Sanchez, and you know, you saw that fight, Tom?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, at one point there, like, who's the guy? Lamas was 70 of 113 significant strikes on Sanchez. And, you know, Anik and Stan were trying to dress it up as best as possible, calling him a warrior, which, you know, I'm not really disputing. But usually when they start bringing up that type of terminology, that means that you're really good at getting beat up.
Yeah, but here's the, like, I was watching the fight, and it was bad, but, he was always still fighting back, and he fights so strangely anyways that it's very tough to count him out in virtually any situation. And I didn't really think that there was a point where the referee should have stopped it and didn't. I thought it was going to get real uncomfortable, but Diego would always find a way to start fighting back, or, Lamas initiated a couple of grappling exchanges and Diego would do fine in the grappling. It was basically just hampering his movement out in the open. So, I really didn't think it was that bad. Of course, I didn't see the Jorgensen fight, but I heard that was a lot worse.
Yeah, and, you take a look at Diego's now lost 4 of 6. So, you know, he lost to Lamas. He beat Ross Pearson. He lost to Miles Jury, Gilbert Melendez. He beat Gomi in a kind of a somewhat controversial decision. And then he lost to Jake Ellenberger. So, I mean, he's fighting some tough guys. He's not getting wiped off the mat. Off the map. It's not like what BJ did to him.
Here's what I do, is if so there's a fight between Evan Dunham and Joe Lozon coming up. If Joe loses to Evan Dunham, then I think you do Joe versus Diego Sanchez, because that's a guaranteed barn burner.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Oh, wait, actually, Diego's down at 145 now, so that blows that.
Yeah, but I wonder if he's willing to, I mean,
Diego versus Clay Guida?
Yeah, I know sometimes these guys, they think going down in weight, it does give them fresh opponents, but I don't know. At some point, I mean, there has to be, law of diminishing returns. Like, you keep going down, at what point does it actually stop helping you?
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't be opposed to see him do a coaching gig on the next Latin America season of Tough, I guess, but I don't know what else to do with him.
Yeah, he's been in a bunch of fights, and man,
he's kind of an iconic figure. You know, everybody knows who he is. Everybody, for the most part, really likes watching him fight. So, hopefully he has something that's going to pay his bills after this fighting thing's done. So,
yeah, and just to make you feel really old, or at least me, he's 34 in December. I mean, I remember he's like 21 years old, and one of the hottest prospects in the sport.
Yeah, well, he's had a good career, 25-7, or yeah, I believe 25-8 now, but 14-8 in the UFC. He's been a stud for a long time and always had exciting fights. And, whether you thought he won or lost some close decisions, for the most part, nobody ever complained about actually watching a Diego Sanchez fight. So if he hung it up now, he'd have absolutely nothing to hang his head in shame about.
Yeah, he's a guy, hopefully they can find some kind of office job for him, because I think he'd be a good ambassador. They're trying to get into Mexico.
Grappler too. He beat Pablo Popovich in grappling match. I mean, he was one of the top grapplers before he started fighting in the UFC. So, obviously I think the most dangerous aspect of mixed martial arts is the blows that you take to your head over time, and luckily for the most part that stuff won't hinder your grappling abilities, so you know, perhaps even get back on that circuit and kind of quench his competitive thirst that way.
Another thing, I saw Luke Thomas put up a tweet about the pacing of the show, and from what I understand, the show went over 4 hours.
It was so long.
Yeah. Now, I know there were some decisions, or a lot of decisions, and that doesn't help, but, I mean, there's fight cards that, you know, have early stoppages, knockouts, submissions, what have you, and yeah. They still go on forever, and I just find it incredibly difficult to believe that they can't show all the fights the commercials within 2.5 hours.
Can we not talk about this? The show was really boring.
Well, I mean, yeah.
We've talked about the most important stuff.
But there is one that was kind of controversial that I think people would want your opinion on. The Neil Magny, Kelvin Gastelum score.
Yeah.
So, Magny is unbelievable. I mean, this guy lives the mantra, you know, I don't get ready, I stay ready. He's fought five times in the UFC in 2014, and then five times this year. I mean, I don't know, in two calendar years, has anybody fought 10 times in the UFC?
I believe he's got to be the busiest fighter in UFC history, I would imagine.
Yeah. So, you know, just go by it, you know, round by round. I mean, the round one and round two, I think, were pretty clear for Magny with his grappling and keeping distance and superior striking.
He was tossing Gastelum around like he was a kid.
Yeah, you know.
McDonald, which I've never seen Gastelum manhandled like that, and I didn't expect it from Magny here, but he was all over him.
Yeah, that was surprising because Gastelum's a strong guy, man. Yeah, especially the 170 pounds. Now, round three was questionable. You know, it was how did you score it?
I thought Magny won it.
Scoring it live, I said Magny too. So I had him up 3-0. So that has him up 30-27 entering the very controversial fourth round, which saw Magny get knocked down twice. But, you know, when he got knocked down, I didn't get that feeling, okay, this fight's done. I mean, he was moving. He was, you know, trying to get work for a submission or trying to work for positional advantage. Do you think it was a 10-8?
No, I don't, because I don't think he was ever really that close to finishing. I thought that Magny's round one was really just as dominant as that round four was by Gastelum. So then
if you go round three to Magny and then round four Gastelum, 10-9,
48-47 Magny.
48-47 Magny. And if you did go 10-8, it would be 47-47 draw. I mean, certainly couldn't argue with that. But
no, I'm not opposed to seeing more draws. I think some fights are draws. You know, just so happens that that's the case with this 10-point must system in a 5-round fight. Yeah. You know?
Under the Pride system, who would you give the victory to?
I don't know. I was so impressed early on by Magny that I think that clouds my judgment. So, you know, when I look at it, I just go, okay, Magny, to me, won the fight. But at the end, if you go by the Pride system, then Gastelum wins the fight because he was the fresher of the two fighters, you know, in the final round.
I think it was Gastelum because round three was highly questionable. I think that could have gone either way. And then round four, Gastelum dropped him twice, bordering on a 10-8, and then round five I thought was a clear round for Gastelum too. So if you were just to, you know, pick a winner, I think it's Gastelum. But, you know, under the, you know, 10-point must system, Tom. Hey, Tom, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I was just saying, you know, 48-47 Magny, certainly a good card. But just personally, I would have gone 47-47. Because, man, you got to start giving those 10-8s. I mean, I was listening to your show with Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer. I don't know if it was Brian or Dave said there's only 35 10-8s in 2015.
Yeah, but here's the thing. To me, even though they were knockdowns, I thought, you know, if you look at it like a domination standpoint, that Magny's, you know, first round was just as dominant as Gastelum's. You know, there was multiple times that Gastelum didn't do anything in that round, you know, like nothing. Magny was all over him. Takedowns, taking his back, almost getting the rear naked, moving a mount. So if you're going to look at it, you know, from a dominant standpoint, you have to factor the grappling in to that as well, because realistically, Magny was able to recover from those punches. You know, there's such a thing as a flash knockdown. You know, there's flash knockouts, there's knockouts, there's flash knockdowns, and there's knockdowns, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I never
kind of cancel each other out if you're going to look at it, you know, objectively.
I never really thought that Magny was in trouble. I was like, you know, and then the other thing that surprised me, and I think even Brian Stan made a comment on it, was why when Magny was on the ropes, so to speak, why was he pushing him against the cage when he should have just laid off and continued to throw punches at him?
Well, that's a situation where his instincts overtook you know, his fight IQ, or you know, his in fight ability to you know, decipher what's going on and kind of formulate a game plan, you know, on the fly. You know, even if your game plan is to take the guy down and start beating him up, if you punch him and you start knocking him around, you should probably continue to punch him.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah. If you don't think you're a better striker than somebody, but then you start hitting them and they're not hitting you, and you know, you hit them 10 times in a row, that doesn't mean you should go for a shot and start grappling. Probably means you should continue doing what's already working, or you know, a variant of that.
Sure. Now, the other somewhat noteworthy thing that happened last night was Henry Cejudo won his fight against Formiga, Brazilian guy, flyweight division. So it looks like the Moose versus Henry Cejudo sometime early 2016. Yep. You think Cejudo's got a chance here against the Moose, or?
I don't even want to talk about it. I that's not interested in using my ability to think.
Well, what if I were to say that it was going to be the Moose versus the Gooch too?
Oh God, then I'd be pumped.
They bet, you know, they should save that for Saitama Super Arena.
Yeah, they really should. Co-promotion with Ryzen in 2040.
Have like Funaki out there and Sakuraba. Oh man, yeah. All right. So, and then what was the other thing I wanted to? Do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about MMA related?
The World Series of Fighting tournament on Friday night. That's a pretty cool concept. I like seeing these one night tournaments back in action, whether it's Bellator, you know, putting on that 4-man light heavyweight tournament, or this World Series of Fighting 8-man lightweight tournament. I think it's a novel concept in many ways, and it's a throwback that I think is a welcome addition, or, you know, welcome change to the MMA landscape.
I really don't like it. I think it's kind of an antiquated approach.
Come on.
I don't like it because, I mean,
it adds intrigue and drama.
Yeah, but didn't two guys that lost in the quarters, they made it to the – it got so damn confusing after a while. So two guys that lost in the quarters.
It creates storylines, Brian. Now, right, Brian Foster is going to get a title shot, okay? If he wins, Zhao Zeferino has a legitimate claim to getting a title shot against him. So it sets up multiple matches in the future. It's like the G1 booking. It's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I think,
and it, you know, it, and if Foster loses, it still sets up Zeferino to fight Gaethje.
So, what was Foster's record on the night? I mean, I didn't follow
he was,
it that.
He was 2-1. What happened? He lost in the first round to Zeferino. He got brought back because somebody was injured. He then beat, I think it was Macaco. And then he was losing, I think, to Zeferino in the finals. And with the last, you know, in the last 15 seconds, landed a punch from on top, through Zeffirino's guard and knocked him out. So pretty phenomenal finish to the show.
So prior to this event, Foster had turned down a title shot?
According to Chris Camozzi on the UG.
Yeah. Well, I believe Chris. I don't think he's of the one-man army contingent. I believe him. I think the reason – probably because there was more financial upside fighting three times in a night. I mean, you know, maybe they were going to pay him like 10-10, you know, and he had potential maybe to win 30, 40, or 50,000 if he won the tournament.
Yeah. I don't know how they get – how do they get by the commission doing this? With a, I understand the four-man tournament because he could do a two-round fight and then a three-round fight. But
well, I think they got around it because the quarterfinal bouts were one round.
Oh, so the first fights were only one round.
Yeah, yeah. So
okay. So then it was a two-round and then another two-round fight? Is that – no, it was a three-round fight in the end. So
was that – I mean, I know – I didn't follow it that closely on Friday, but I know for sure that when I was reading the article leading up, that a first round or the quarters were one round bouts, and then
yeah.
two round.
I wonder
bouts.
What the maximum is for rounds that you can have in one night. Maximum rounds you could fight.
You know, I don't think there's a one rule. I mean, a lot of people talk about the unified rules. But that's kind of a misnomer. Every state has their own interpretation of the unified rules.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think you could do that tournament in Nevada, but you could go to Arizona and do it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah. Because I believe in California, you know, they couldn't do that tournament.
Yeah, you could only do four, right?
Yeah, it's either that or they don't even have enough light heavyweights on the roster. But
yeah, so that... That's World Series of Fighting, and I guess, yeah, good for Foster, you know, to win that tournament, get some good publicity. You know, that's a guy that's been through, you know, hell and back to continue this MMA career. I mean, a guy that, I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, he lost a testicle in training. Can you believe that? And then also had to have brain surgery, had some bleeding on his brain, so and came back. I mean, shit, if that's not dedication, if it ain't dedication, then he's just fucking crazy.
Yeah, probably is.
Yeah. All right. So what do you want to tell us about the Survivor Series?
It was awesome.
This
WWE does.
So no ice is running.
Nah, I was waiting for it, but it didn't happen. So luckily, I'm glad. I would hate to see that. That would have been the drizzling shits.
I can't believe Vince didn't come out and cut a promo on ISIS.
Well, it did open up with Lillian Garcia singing, you know, National Anthem or Star Spangled Banner or something. Maybe she just did the pledge. I can't remember.
Well, that's a nice touch. I mean, that's a very subtle. I guess Vince going out there and yelling.
Yeah.
But I watched that video and I think I posted it on Twitter. What was it, September 13th, Houston, 2001, the first, like, sporting event or large crowd gathering. And I'm like, man, Vince McMahon is an incredible leader. I mean, he went out there, and it was pretty obvious. Nothing was scripted.
You guys got some balls, man.
It was totally off the fucking cuff. And I'm just like, man, if I was in that situation, I couldn't have done it. You know, I couldn't have put something together that made that good a sense. It was, you know, 14 years looking back, I was like, man, that's, it wasn't a promo. It was just Vince speaking from the heart, but it was pretty incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is a good show. Despite the adversity, in the face of adversity, I thought it was good, you know, good show. So, opened up with Reigns versus Del Rio. The show, by the way, was brought to us by Rolaids. Thanks, guys. They had a nice graphic on the screen that said, Rolaids kick acid. Out of the replays, yeah. Del Rio looks like he's on the paleo diet. Very shredded. Very tanned.
Is that code for gimmick? Or?
Yep.
Oh, man. He is out of his fucking mind.
Yeah, right? He's shredded beyond belief. Like, just 2 weeks ago, he wasn't that shredded. So, I don't know if Zeb has the hookup. Holla if you hear him. But Reigns didn't hear what was going on from Zeb or Del Rio, and hit him with a spear for the win. Then we had Ambrose versus Owens. At one point, Owens yelled out Chinlock City, which I thought was pretty damn good. There's also a Diet Owens Diet sign in the crowd. And at one point during the Ambrose versus Owens match, there was the big spitting fisherman's buster by Kevin Owens. And Jerry Lawler says, Dean must have been surprised, but Owens does it every single pay-per-view match. So why would he be surprised?
Let me ask you about, because I'm wondering about Owens. You know, they brought him up in May and he had those that pretty cool three-match series, I think it was, with John Cena.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, they got something here. I know he doesn't look like they, you know, he wears his basketball shorts. He's got this big gut and he wears a t-shirt. Yeah. But he's got this
here's the
aura
thing.
Of arrogance.
Yeah, Brian, he should have been Vader, and instead they turn him into like Bastion Booger.
Yeah, I think they've totally ruined that guy. I mean, he's jobbing out to everybody.
Rusev. They just did that with Rusev. You know, right before the end of the summer and into the early fall, they just turned him, you know, he started losing matches all the time and kind of turned him into, you know, a mid-carder.
Yeah, and that was a guy, you know, heading into WrestleMania in Santa Clara this year that, you know, you were looking at and you're like, yeah, this guy, you know, he's a headliner. I think he might be a headliner for...
Yeah, he's a great character. He's big. He's credible. He's hilarious, you know. I can't believe, you know, what they did. Basically, he was a monster, and now they turn him into kind of a joke. So we'll see how they handle him when he comes back. But, you know, Kevin Owens, I guess he is in the final four, so he's in, you know, conceivably one of the top four guys in the country company. But, you know, here's the other thing is they have this final match between Ambrose and Reigns because Ambrose beats Kevin Owens with the Dirty Deeds, DDT. And then Reigns just pins Ambrose with a spear, clean, no angle between those two or nothing. So why not have Reigns versus Owens? You know, why even, you know, give away Reigns versus Ambrose in that situation and make it mean nothing instead of just having Reigns go over Owens, you know, or Del Rio or anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, well, why it doesn't seem to be. I mean, you know, how about the Charlotte versus
I didn't really watch that match. I will say, going on with the show, there was the best TLC commercial ever. It's like an 8-bit video game with Roman Reigns, a side scroller. It's pretty cool. You should check it out. Go out of your way.
Yeah, I actually fell asleep during the thing, so I'm going to have to go back and watch it a little bit. But, you know, I've actually been caught up watching this insane championship wrestling from Scotland with Grado. And I've been tweeting some entrances, and Grado is this kind of out of shape. Like, if Kevin Owens was, like, even more out of shape and, like, didn't lift weights, he'd be Grado. And Grado is the most over guy in Insane Championship Wrestling. They drew 4,000 people at their show last week. And he comes out to the iconic Madonna song, Like a Prayer, and starts doing all this crazy dancing. I mean, this guy is entertainment.
Yeah, phenomenal.
And I think you need to bring him into your camp for your next
fight. I told you. It's been confirmed. He's been a secret member of my camp for... a long time. He confirmed it on Twitter.
You actually know this guy?
Yeah, go check the messages. He confirmed it on Twitter.
Yeah, but I don't know what's work and what's a shoot.
Well, hell, it's out in the public. It's a shoot, buddy.
So if people are curious.
You think the only guys I know are, you know, O'Reilly and Fish?
Well, I didn't say that, but if you want to see Grado, there's also a documentary that was on Vice Sports in the UK.
Anybody that was on Vice gets a lot of respect and a lot of pump in the press. So
yeah. So it's Grado. Put that in there in Vice, and it's like a 45-minute documentary.
Can you play that Madonna song? Can you get that thing going?
Let's see.
Continue on while you do that. Or I'll continue on.
I'll continue
reviewing the show here. So after Ambrose versus Owens, there was Usos and Lucha Dragons and Ryback versus New Day, Barrett, Sheamus. New Day ran down Sheamus dogged them in their opening promo. And later on, it led to Big E getting eliminated, and then the New Day just left Sheamus by himself.
Hey, Tom, tell me if you can, if this comes out somewhat clear.
All right.
Is that coming in at all?
No.
Yeah, I don't know how to gimmick.
All right, whatever.
But just put Google Grado, Grado. He's a wrestler from the United Kingdom, and he's funny as fuck.
He was in TNA as well.
Yeah, I read he didn't get over in TNA, or I guess it's hard to.
Does anybody?
Yeah.
So, okay. Which, by the way, they're going on to Pop TV, which is in more homes than Destination America. So I hope that it serves them well. I'd really like to see them, you know, get back to a position where, you know, they can offer more guys bigger contracts for more dates for more money and have a, you know, real second promotion, you know, going toe-to-toe with WWE, whether it's them or Ring of Honor or Lucha Underground or whatever it is. You know, I want to see more of it, so.
Let me try this, Tom. Let me unplug the mic and see if I can.
Okay.
Let's see. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
So this is Grado's entrance.
We might get.
We'll make it a copyright. Yeah. So he comes out with Goldberg at first.
What's going on here?
But you know, I think it'll be okay, Tom, because it's just like background music.
Uh-huh.
What is this another? Is this another concussion? What's gonna happen next? Is Eddie Roberts gonna come out and think he's a bushwhacker? What the hell's going on here? Well, ladies and gentlemen, there he is! A phenomenon in the world of pro wrestling!
He's got a fanny pack.
He's like the Kyle Kingsbury of professional wrestling.
And the crowd sings every word.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Ladies and gentlemen!
It's not coming. I've got a lot of bass there, bro.
Can you hear me,
Great
Tom?
Performer.
What?
Great performer.
He sure is, man. And those fans over there in Scotland, I mean, that's it reminds me a little bit of ECW. I mean, it's not as kind of edgy, but
yeah.
Man, they like their announcers, they curse a lot. They call people cunts and stuff.
Well, that's just their language over there. So I'll have to check out some of it. You know, Drew Galloway is pretty credible wrestler, pretty damn good in the ring. So I know he's over there and some other guys. So I'll definitely check some out. We could talk about it.
Yeah. They had the commissioner for the last car that drew 4,000 people was Mick Foley.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so they got some money to, you know, to. I'm sure Mick Foley's not – I mean, yeah. Man,
it went well for TNA too, so. You know. So yeah, I guess the big news coming out of Survivor Series, obviously, is Kane. Kane is back. And
your favorite wrestler.
Yeah, yeah. He's back, and he helped The Undertaker beat Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper. Harper takes a tombstone. Brothers of Destruction walk out victorious. I popped. I liked it. I marked out. So,
but Tom, when did this obsession with Kane begin?
I think he's just, you know, he's been around forever. They put him in every single role. The shittiest storylines you could ever think of. The guy is still around after all of it. I kind of hold him, you know, I hold him at the very top. And right behind him is basically like Mark Henry. Mark Henry went through the same thing with a lot of crappy storylines, but he's persevered through it all. And, you know, despite what would look like many attempts at from the WWE to get him to quit, has stayed with the company.
Sure.
So I admire their perseverance, Brian.
Oh, I thought there was more to it, that like you just like his character.
I do. I just like him. You know, I've seen his entire run. You know, basically I've seen him since he was Isaac Yankum and then the fake Diesel and then Kane. So
the reason I ask is because so many people are just like, all right, you know, Kane, we know you're Hall of Famer. We respect you, but we're done seeing you in the main event. Same with the Big Show.
Yeah, but okay. Like, you know, I think you could keep him and the Undertaker around and milk them for more if they're a tag team. They don't have to do as much in the ring. They come out, have, you know, nostalgia tag team matches. They can go when they want. And, you know, I think it adds to the show definitely more than it detracts. I don't know if it's worth it to The Undertaker, you know, to work pay-per-views and just show up then, or maybe do more than just WrestleMania over the course of the year. But, you know, if he's going to continue to work, I think you have him at one of the, you know, the WrestleMania and then the other big four or big three pay-per-views, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, the Rumble, and then WrestleMania. And you could always throw him in a tag team match with Kane and you know, get something out of it.
Who is Taker going to wrestle at Mania?
Probably Bray Wyatt.
Oh, again?
Shit, I don't know. I mean, we got no hint tonight, so
yeah,
it won't be Brock. I got no clue.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Probably not Owens. I can't see that.
You think John Cena? Because they haven't wrestled.
No, I don't know. Listen, last night Dave Meltzer mentioned that he thinks Cena against Reigns at WrestleMania. So,
see that again? I pulled the earbuds out of my. You said Cena and
last night on the Observer, Dave mentioned something about Reigns versus Cena being possible for WrestleMania. So I don't know how legit that is or how much, you know, how concrete that is, I guess I should say. I'm sure the info is legit, but I don't know how concrete that is. So that could take Cena out of it. But I, you know, I had heard that mentioned before. I personally don't care about seeing that match, really.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's like, you know, not really much to it. I mean, the problem at Reigns, I mean, he just can't express himself. They're going to, I don't know.
Express yourself. Do it good. Da-da-da-da-da.
They need to, maybe Bischoff wants to come back and be his mouthpiece, but then you got to turn him heel. I mean, I don't know. He's just dead airwaves to me, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure he's going to be chasing Sheamus for the title. So I wonder if, you know, Seth Rollins being out just kind of altered their plans and made them slot Sheamus into Seth Rollins' spot. It'll be interesting to see, and I think we'll be able to tell a lot based on how Sheamus's interactions with Wade Barrett are going forward. You know, if they're still looked at as a team or friends, or if Sheamus distances himself from that. So, you know, maybe there's going to be a stable on our hands. Maybe not. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. Sheamus, he's been given a lot of opportunities to get over. I know he's kind of
thing. Like, I think if you give Sheamus the title and if you surround him with a few other guys, kind of like in the role that they had Seth Rollins with Kane and the Big Show, you know, backing him up, and then J&J Security, you know, you could make it work. But just Sheamus versus Reigns at the top with Triple H, you know, being the catalyst behind it all isn't really going to do much for me, and I don't think it's going to do much for most of the viewers. But, you know, if you get Sheamus up there, then you have Wade Barrett as a lackey, and then, you know, Rusev was actually paired up with them while they were together. So if he comes back and he's slotted in there again, you know, you could have something, you know, that's more interesting than just Reigns versus Sheamus. So,
when is Rusev slated to return?
Good question that I do not know the answer to.
Did he rupture his Achilles? Was that the...
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
There were so many injuries and stuff between him and Dolph Ziggler and Summer Rae and Lana. I know Lana is back training, I guess.
Oh, is she? Yeah, I saw on Instagram she put up a picture. I mean, they...
Hey, she needs to work out those guns to lift up that rock that's on her finger.
Yeah, man, but I was going to say that was no little injury. They cut into her wrists pretty good. I guess they put some, I don't know what they would, what do? They put a rod in there or I'm sure they would like to put.
Yeah, I'd love to put a rod.
Yeah. Or a steel plate or.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this controversy with Ric Flair and his son Reed.
Distasteful, tasteless.
They cut it from the promo package.
Good.
But they kind of hinted like. Yeah. They said whatever. Some things.
What's the point in you know, even bring that up? I don't. It made me uncomfortable. Unnecessary. You know, and here's the thing, you have a show where you got fucking Bray Wyatt pretending he has magical powers, and then you got something on the complete opposite end of the spectrum like that, that's so real, you know, and it's just unnecessary, I don't know, not a fan of it.
But what about in defense of this?
It didn't add to the match either, that's the thing, it didn't add a damn thing to the whole situation.
Yeah, but I mean, well, what about CM Punk with Paul Bearer's ashes? I mean, was that distasteful? But I mean, they did get the buy-in from the family.
Yeah, which, that's one thing. You know, it's one thing if you do that because obviously the family knows the situation better than anybody else. But the way that it sounds is that they didn't get, you know, a real go-ahead from the family, and in a situation like that, especially with somebody who's close to the company. It's not like it's, you know, somebody who's outside the company that they're making this, you know, joke about or making light of the situation or making it into an angle. It's, you know, it's somebody who's been associated with it and done a lot for the very business that these people are in. And, you know, that makes it even worse.
I just can't believe that Vince thought that would be a good idea, you know, especially like you said, he does have a good relationship with Ric Flair. He was the general manager on the last European tour just a few weeks back. Why wouldn't you go to him and say, hey, you know, because if you go to his Ashley Flair or Charlotte, if you go to her, you know, she's a rookie in the main roster, and she's probably going to say yes to anything because she wants, you know, she doesn't want to get heat, right?
Yeah. Here, you have to marry Bram. Okay.
Here. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's got some, you know, that she's actually, that's her, actually her second marriage. You know, she was married to this guy that used to play football at Ole Miss, and it lasted maybe a year. That's the guy that got in a fight with Rick, and Rick got all, you know, it looked like Rick got beat, you know, got beat up really bad, but I think it was just all that fucking scar tissue. I don't think the guy beat up Rick that bad, but it looked bad.
That was.
Yeah.
A couple chops. Nobody can withstand it.
I mean, yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, you look at Charlotte and she married Bram. I'm like, oh my God. What are some of these women thinking?
I like Bram as a performer, but apparently he beats up women too. Like, wasn't he accused of domestic violence? So.
That charge got dropped, but, you know, as we both know.
So I'm glad to hear that.
You know, as we both know, I mean, dropped domestic violence charges, you know, usually don't mean anything. Yeah, it just means that the girl will cooperate.
Speaking of which, Thiago Silva lost a fight yesterday.
Yeah, I actually found out about that from a mutual friend of ours sent me a tweet from somebody associated with Shamrock FC, and he sent me a picture of the guy that beat him up, and I was like, I said, who's that? Is he a fighter? He's like, yeah, that's the guy that beat up Thiago Silva. I was like, oh, man. He used to be the scariest motherfucker in the UFC. Well, you know.
Was it a Necro Butcher? Is that what he looked like?
No, he looked like Heath Slater.
Why doesn't Vice do a thing on the Necro Butcher? That's who they should do it.
Hey, you know, what happened to the – did he retire?
I don't know.
When I was really into
– infected everybody and now he's gone. I think he's a zombie.
Oh, he had the Hep gimmick?
I don't know. I have no idea. No, I don't know that.
Oh.
Never heard that, but.
Well, I mean, he bladed himself. I mean, you got to be one crazy motherfucker to blade, you know, on those indie shows. It's not like WWE where they're probably getting tested for communicable diseases.
Yeah.
You know, just like that guy Nicholson, Drew, what's the guy's name, that is suing Abdullah the Butcher?
Yeah, I don't know, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Hannibal. I think Hannibal is his ring name, and he's adamant that Abdullah the Butcher gave him Hep C by, you know, he gigged them. You know, he didn't tell him he was going to do it. And but I think he's also a legit wrestler too. He was like runner up in heavyweight Greco-Roman for the Canadian national team.
Really?
But, yeah, but I think it is curable now. I even heard Pamela Anderson on the Howard Stern show, because she had it. She said it's curable now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So if you ever get Hep C, Tom, you know, I mean, it's not like,
well, you know, I had a scare before one of the fights. Before I was going to fight Chris Weidman, I got a call from the UFC saying, hey, don't be alarmed, but you tested positive for hepatitis. I can't remember which one it was, but they sent me to get a bunch of tests done, and it took like another 2 weeks to get the results back. So that was 2 weeks of not training.
So were you like, what bitch gave this to me?
Were you going
through your list? Like,
no, well, I was thinking about it. It could be anything. Brian, you know, you train on mats with people. You know, it's possible that they bleed on you, or, you know, there's a lot of ways, a lot of other ways it could happen. Like, you know, getting drunk and eating trash, cookies out of the trash, stuff like that.
Really? Kind of,
yeah, you know.
Oh, shit. Maybe I should get tested for it.
Yeah.
So is what else we got on Survivor Series?
Roman Reigns beat Dean Ambrose clean in the middle with a spear. Triple H came out. Roman Reigns made the dumbass mistake of spearing him for no reason, which gave Sheamus the opportunity to come down, hit a bro kick, cash in the Money in the Bank, go for the pin. Reigns kicked out. Sheamus hit him with another one, picked him up. What, I think he went for another one. I don't know. There was two in there. So he hit him, picked him up, went for it again. Reigns ducked, and then Sheamus hit him with it again and pinned him. 1, 2, 3. Him and Triple H shook hands, walked around a little bit. That was it. Roman Reigns walked to the back looking like the saddest panda on the planet. And that was it.
I just hope I didn't fuck up this audio thing when we had that little hiccup.
Oh, well. We'll find out later.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't think I had anything else.
All right, me neither. Sounds good.
Oh, yeah, I did have something else. So you're going to hang out with the great Chris Sturgill?
I believe so. I have extended the olive branch to him, so I'll let you know. I should have invited him over to watch Survivor Series tonight, but I didn't think about it until it was too late. So
yeah,
I'll let you know how that goes.
Sturgill is at Chris Sturgill. What is it? STU
12, I think.
Yeah, at Chris Sturgill 12. He partied with us in Chicago. I still have this visual of him carrying like 8 drinks, and they were all for him.
It was the human Barney Gumble.
And we're gonna have him on here because we have to start
strip
a little
club review with strip club review with Chris Sturgill.
Yeah, yeah, Chris
Sturgill's strip clubs.
Chris goes to these strip clubs in Iowa, and he is a. I'll let him tell the stories, but. We want to have a whack pack, you know, and I think Chris is,
I think the snack pack is, yeah, I don't want to insult these guys.
Yeah, but it's not really like an insult. It just means that he's a character. I mean, I wouldn't want
anybody. I also don't want to be ripping off,
Howard. You
know,
yeah.
Much there.
Yeah. Yeah. But Chris is a character. We'll get him on here and he'll tell us some stories.
Yeah.
But, all right, so that's the return of the Filthy FRB show. You know, we'll be more consistent. I think we're going to start – are we going to go with that idea on Thursdays? We're going to try – what is your schedule like with
– Works for me, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll be closer to your time zone, so we'll be pretty close to being on the same page. And
be out
there on Wednesday.
Can't wait to visit.
Yeah. All right. That's it.
The cold core is going to be close by.
Yeah, you get it directly from the brewery there in Golden, Colorado. There you go.
I didn't even think about that. How amazing.
All right. Later.
Peace.